Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we'll be discussing Desiree Akhavan's drama, The Miseducation of Cameron Post, as well as hearing from Desiree Akhavan herself. I'm Sam Howlett, and joining me this week, Stephen Ryder.
Hello.
And Kelly Powell.
Shalom.
Ooh. Ooh. Now, I was going to make a joke, but I couldn't decide on three, so there was Miseducation of Cameron Post. Miseducation of Podder and Post.
That's the worst.
Miseducation of Cameron Pod.
That's the best one, yeah. I think, if we have to choose.
The cleanest.
Yeah.
The Miseducation of Podium and Post.
Miseducation of Podder and Pod.
No one to stop. No. Too many pods.
Also, what's really weird is that... So me and Steven saw Con Air recently at a cinema.
No idea how you're going to link these two
Ready?
Together. Yeah.
So that film stars Nicolas Cage, does it not?
It does, yeah.
Do you know what Nicolas Cage's character name is?
It's not Cameron Poe.
Cameron Poe.
So close. I mean, The Miseducation of Cameron Poe would have been an amazing film. An amazing film.
Just let me be me.
Yeah, it would have been great. I mean, that the Christian conversion camp wouldn't have lasted very long.
It's a weird name anyway, Cameron Post.
It was weird.
So I just feel like it's, I don't know.
Mm. Although they do mention, obviously in Miseducation of Cameron Post, they do mention that Cameron is a very masculine name.
That's true.
Which I'm not sure if it is. But, Cameron Poe is a very masculine character. So,
he is.
You know,
the most masculine character.
The most, and I guess this film would have come out at the same time. The time the film is set in the mid-90s would have been when Con Air came out. So there's a lot of links there. Yeah, something to unpack for sure.
Let's talk about a bit about what the film is about then. Miseducation of Cameron Post stars Chloe Grace Moretz as Cameron Post, a young teenager growing up in the Bible Belt of America in the mid-1990s. And she lives with very conservative guardians, her aunt and uncle?
Yeah, I think so.
And one day she is caught in a compromising position with another woman. And so her guardians send her to gay conversion therapy camp, where she is under the watchful eye of Reverend Rick, played by John Gallagher Jr., and the sinister Dr. Lydia March, played by a very creepy Jennifer L. So before we listen to the interview with the writer-director Desiree Akhavan, very quickly, what were your initial thoughts of this film, The Miseducation of Cameron Post?
I mean, so headed into it, with it being a Sundance Grand Jury winner, you kind of have an expectation about what this film's going to be like. Past kind of hits at Sundance have all been... There's been a lot of good films that's come out of Sundance that have won the prize, but they've all had a very specific kind of tone to them and, you know, a very specific kind of aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And I think going into it, I was a bit worried that it would just be a little bit along those lines and because of that be a bit dull. And it does have like those Sundance moments, so the Sundance flashes.
It's definitely colourful.
Yeah, very colourful.
Very sunny.
It looks great, I think it manages to avoid a lot of the pitfalls that those films have come into contact with by not being overly twee, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think it kind of is more real. It doesn't feel quite as forced as some of those other previous kind of Sundance jury winners. And I think, yeah, very authentic and genuine film.
Kelly Powell.
Yeah, I thought it was authentic's a nice word. Really heartfelt, personal. You could tell it was a really personal film as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's hear from the film's writer and director then. Desiree Akhavan made a name for herself with her directorial debut, which she also starred in, Appropriate Behaviour. She's gone on to have a small part in the TV show Girls, and she also acts in a very weird Netflix film called Creep 2. Have you guys seen the Creep films?
Yeah, I actually mentioned Creep 2 to her in
really?
The interview at the start.
Excellent.
Yeah,
have you seen it?
I have, yeah, I love it.
I absolutely love them.
I'm a big fan.
They're so, so phenomenally horrible and weird, but hilarious. Check out Creep. So this is the first time she's directing without acting, I believe.
Yes,
it's her second feature film. And Stephen had the pleasure to speak to her.
So I am here today with Desiree Akhavan, director of Miss Education of Cameron Post, Sundance Grand Jury winner, Miss Education of Cameron Post. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
It seemed like a long time ago now that that happened.
A lifetime ago.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But to zoom out a little bit, my first interaction with your work was actually you as an actor in Creep 2, which I actually found myself drawing a slight comparisons to Cameron Post in a very weird way.
Very cool. Because
obviously in Creep 2, you play a character who does a YouTube kind of vlogger series about strange people, and you come across this guy who professes to be a serial killer. And because you see the work or his work through kind of a female gaze, it kind of exposes him as a bit of a loser, really.
Yeah. Did you find that you saw Aaron differently?
Completely.
In the second film?
Absolutely.
He's got this vulnerability.
Mm. Stop being scary, like, after a while.
But then at the end, did he get scary again?
Yeah, it got scary again at the end.
Yeah, that's
but,
really cool.
Yeah, it was really impressive. And then last year, earlier this year, I read an article where you said that the only mainstream queer female stories have been told by men. Mm-hmm. And that got me thinking that with something like Miss Education of Cameron Post, again, we see it through kind of a woman's gaze. And this idea of like mainstream and queer that you said is really interesting to me, because sometimes those two things can clash together. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Miss Education of Cameron Post, what's so amazing about it is that it bridges that gap. And do you feel the same way?
Definitely. Yeah. Without a doubt. And I really hope it does. I want to make mainstream films that touch a wide audience. I grew up on Blockbusters and Short Circuit and, you know, the Brady Bunch. And those films touched my life. I didn't have the luxury of going to the art house cinema and enjoying Truffaut and Godard until I was in my 20s. When you're, you know, the child of immigrants, you're shaped by what gets filtered down to you, and that's mainstream cinema, and all of that is told through a very heavily male gaze. And I think films and work can be entertaining and female centric.
No, I completely agree, and that's what I think. There's a point in Miss Education of Cameron Post where I realized that you kind of nailed that, where I took a look at all these characters in the first kind of 45 minutes of the film, and I realized that the film could really be titled Miseducation of any of them, Miseducation of Jane Fonda, like any of these characters, they all seem to have such a rich backstory. But obviously Cameron is the main character, and why do you think she works so well as kind of a center point to this film? Why is the story filtered through like her eyes?
Because the book said so.
Well, even in the book, why do you think they positioned her?
Well, to be fair, the film is based on a book of the same title, and which is a fantastic cheat sheet. I think the thing that I loved about the book, and it was difficult to translate because it's told, you know, through her inner dialogue, which was that Cameron was hilarious and just like anybody. She was so honest and typical. And her mediocrity and all, you know, she was in extraordinary circumstances, but just a normal kid. And I wanted this to feel like just any normal kid story. That is a hard thing to communicate without a voiceover. And we definitely didn't want to utilize a voiceover in this adaptation. And what we were lucky with casting Chloe Moretz in this role was that she can really live in a close-up without any dialogue. She's someone who can communicate a lot in a close-up.
He's all eyebrows, right?
All like... eyebrows.
No.
God, there were huge issues with the eyebrows too, because the Chloe likes them thick and the makeup artist was like, in the 90s, we had them thin. But I always felt like, you know, as a lesbian, she would not have allowed anyone to come near her with the tweezers.
I think that's a very good point. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are moments in the film you said about her being so hilarious and yeah. so normal. And the bit that I instantly connected with her was in the group therapy session where somebody says, I take one look at you and I can tell you're a dyke. And instead of being offended, she just bursts out laughing.
Yeah.
And I was like, because I laughed exactly the same time as her. I was like, oh, I get who she is now. Like, you get her immediately. And I think Chloe does an excellent job of kind of...
She gets the absurdity of the place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think Chloe does as well. And that's why the performance is so kind of... fantastic and why it pulls you in. And did you always have her in mind from the start, or was it quite a did it change during the casting then?
We had nobody in mind. I wanted to discover someone for that role. Mm. And we held auditions for a long time and I never found anybody that I felt was right. And then just as I was about to fly back, because I live in London and we were prepping in New York and we hadn't been greenlit yet because we hadn't found our cast, and just as I was getting ready to book a flight home, I heard that Chloe Moretz wanted to meet, and I was shocked. I did not think, the reason I hadn't thought of her was because we didn't think this was the kind of stuff she'd be interested in. To us, to me, she was a studio darling. And then when I heard she was interested, I was instantly really excited by the idea, because she was someone who had such a princessy persona.
Mm-hmm.
And Cameron has got none of that. She's, you know, through and through a lesbian with swagger, mm-hmm. who steals the hearts of most of the girls who meet her, and is also quite introverted.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Chloe is someone who, with all these films, was... you know, definitely had the persona of the Clouds of Sils Maria, you know, starlet.
Yeah.
With the big hair and the pretty blonde ingenue.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, what cool casting is that, to watch that girl carry a sex scene.
Yeah, yeah.
With another girl, yeah. where she's the top. And, you know, to me, Cameron was a love letter to all the women I've loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him butch. So.
That's so great that you get to make a character that's kind of full of all these different people that you've met in your life, though. And it shows. It certainly shows. And going back to what you said about the eyebrows in the 90s, I did want to ask you, so there are a lot of filmmakers at the moment who are looking at the past in order to kind of expose the present. Obviously, Black Klansman has just come out.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Spielberg did it last year with The Post. Is there apart from the film, the book being set in the 90s, is there a reason that you felt that this story belongs in the 90s?
It was really important to me that they were as isolated as possible and that they had no image of anything gay mm-hmm. in the mainstream,
mm-hmm.
which was the case in the 90s. I think with the internet, yes, these places still exist. Yes, it's very hard to grow up right now queer, but at the same time, there's at least the concept or the idea of something gay out there.
Yeah.
This is a time pre Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's weird.
Did that time ever exist?
I know, exactly. I do ask myself that quite often. But like 25 years ago is not that long ago. And yet, the landscape of what it was to be gay was to choose to live life as a second-class citizen in such a dramatic way. And also, for these kids, I thought it was really important that they had no link to the outside world. I think young people are really empowered right now with technology, mm-hmm. and I didn't want that for this story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it would have completely changed it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, no doubt. So... when you ended up looking at the scene with where Chloe or Cameron dances on the mm-hmm. kitchen top, you got the chance to kind of slip the Breeders in there, which I loved, by the way, because they're one of my favorite bands. So it was so nice to hear them of name checked. And I remember you talking recently that scene with Chloe dancing on the kitchen top was actually filmed on a pretty dark day in America's history. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So we shot in upstate New York,
mm-hmm.
and midway through the shoot, the American elections took place, and it was such a shock to all of us because we were really excited. I remember our one of our producers threw a huge party. There were red, white, and blue balloons everywhere. Yeah. There was an ice cream sundae bar.
The staple of any presidential celebration. Yeah.
That morning at breakfast, he was like, you know what? I can't believe I get to raise my girl in a country with a female president. Mm-hmm. And I felt very nervous when I heard him say that. Mm-hmm, so I was like, I hope so. Mm-hmm. But as the night wore on, it became really clear the country we were about to get. And that next day, the only thing I could make it akin to was September 11th. Mm-hmm. And I'm born and raised in New York. So the city after the day after September 11th was very post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
I remember because my dad drove me in. We lived in the suburbs, but I went to school in the Bronx and school was canceled. But I was a theater nerd and I really wanted to see the producers. And I was like, this will be a good opportunity to see that sold out Broadway show that I love so much. This is actually September 13th.
You got
to
find those silver linings.
Oh my God. That I insisted on waiting in line outside for 5 hours to get standing room tickets to go see the producers is a real sign of the kind of teenager I was.
Yeah.
That I was determined to see every Broadway show. I'm a big Mel Brooks fan. So there, but I, as we were in this driving in the city, there was just no one on the streets and everyone you saw, there was just this communal mourning. And that was definitely what we felt on set. And it's funny, my dad said something to me when he dropped me off that day. I was 17 and my dad's from Iran and he's experienced war and he's been through a lot. And I told him, you know, it's funny that you're going to just drop me off in Times Square. 2 days ago, there was a terrorist attack in the same city.
You'd think he'd be overprotective.
Like, being the Iranian daddy you are and being your princess, why are you doing this? I'm just surprised not to bite the hand that feeds me. But explain it. And he was like, Desi, if you live in fear, you die a little every day. But if you keep moving forward, you only die once. And
That kind of reminds me of the scene with where one of the characters in Cameron Post talks about when you're strongest when you are weak.
Like,
you when you get over that fear, you know, that's when you become your kind of
strongest. When you like look into the eye of the storm.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
amazing.
Unfortunately, he's saying it during a complete emotional breakdown.
Unfortunately.
Dad said it during one of his better moments. But what was interesting about that, the juxtaposition of those two experiences of communal mourning in my life was, you know, many years later, I found myself at the helm of a film set while we were all horrified and terrified and just everybody was a shell of themselves and just sobbing. I cannot begin to articulate the fear that we were all experiencing. And then all those fears came true. It's funny because my brother was like, you know what? He's a social liberal. Like, he's a New Yorker. It's just all an act to get in the office. And then immediately the Muslim ban.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just instantly every single fear we had was there. But, I looked at my crew and I told them I would rather be here than anywhere in the world. And it was true. I was really grateful to be on set making something and not just dying by myself that day. And so we had to shoot the most joyful moment in the whole film, which is when Cameron, who's kind of stoned at this point, happy with her friends. She has friends for the first time in her life who she can be honest with. And she jumps on a table and starts singing Four Non-Blondes' What's Up, and is just goofy and silly. And it's Cameron's a really introverted character who never gets out of her shell, and she's quite opaque at moments. And this is one of the most lighthearted and clear glimpses into her that you see. And it's a real testament to Chloe Moretz. She was the only, and Chloe Moretz who campaigned for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
But also I think a testament to her youth that she was just there and focused and ready to play.
Like, it's great. It works out so well.
But we took a break in the middle of shooting that scene. Yeah. So we had to do a lot of takes because it was a mess that day and everyone was a mess. And so Chloe jumps on the table. We get it from all different angles. So she had to jump on the table and sing at the top of her lungs about
25, 30 times in the course of like 6 hours. And we took a break in the middle of that morning mm-hmm. to watch Hillary Clinton's concession speech.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chloe came back even stronger. I mean, that was her.
That's so great. I mean, the film for me ends on a very triumphant note, and it was bittersweet because I wanted to stick around with these characters. So I guess we've not got long left, but I guess I just wanted to ask you, of course there's no sequel to Cameron Post, but do you think you have that American road movie in you somewhere? You know, because I feel like when they're driving in that car, the way it's shot, the way the kind of whole atmosphere is, you know, it would have been great.
Yeah, there's a real beauty, like sexy beauty to a road movie. I don't think I have it in me because I hate being on the road. I think that you have to be your films, yeah. And I like deeply do not enjoy being on the road. I mean, I think there is a sequel to this film and Sasha's in it. It's called American Honey. They start selling magazines for Shia LaBeouf is what I think happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It would have been great to see Cameron in the background of that.
A fate worse than death.
Well,
being
thank
with
you.
Shia LaBeouf.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lovely conversation.
Thank you.
And
for
I really hope that the next movie you bring out has the same kind of impact as Cameron Post.
Thank you so much.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Miseducation of Cameron Post then. I want to talk about Chloe Grace Moretz first. She's in almost pretty much every scene. Yeah. Seems like she's in every shot of the film. Mm-hmm. It's very much her film. And I think she's someone that has a weird reputation in the film industry. I think people sort of think of her as someone who started out in these kind of slightly edgier films, like she did Kick-Ass, and then she did stuff like Let Me In, the remake of Let the Right One In. But I think some people mistake her for like a sort of a tween, like a kind of glamorous Hollywood actress that does these kind of...
In the Selena Gomez.
But I don't think she's that at all. And that's actually looking at her filmography. She's actually done really interesting stuff most of the time. She was in Hugo, the Scorsese film. Mm-hmm. I know it's not a great film, but she was in Dark Shadows, the Tim Burton film. She was in the Carrie remake. She was in The Clouds of Sils Maria briefly.
Oh, really?
She was in The Equalizer. She was in Bad Neighbors 2, which I know is a brash, loud comedy, but I think it's really funny. Mm-hmm. I think in general she's made good choices, and we're going to be seeing her in Suspiria later this year. Mm. But what did you make of her in this film? And what do you make of how this sort of moves her career along?
I think that it's possibly the best thing I've seen. I think she's peaking at the moment. Like, she's brilliant in this film. Mm-hmm. She's so believable, just really, really good in it. I think that there was a risk for her to do this film. But I think you spoke to Desiree about it, about her being really passionate about doing this mm-hmm. project.
Yeah, she was the one that sought out the script.
Yeah, because
Desiree
wanted
to do put an unknown in the cast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I think that the reason Chloe works so well, I think you can tell that she's comfortable working with this director, for one. Mm. I think she's comfortable doing... things that she wants to do with this character that she hasn't been told to do by Desiree, because there's some stuff in this film that's far too subtle and too authentic to be directed.
It's a great collaboration between director and lead. I think that she's just really fantastic in it. She's so You feel sorry for her, but you also think there's a fire behind her eyes as well.
You never feel like she's gonna fall apart or break down,
exactly.
Like, which makes you like get behind her even more.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that for Chloe Grace Moretz, she's still a very. She seems like she's been around forever.
Yeah,
she's still really really young. She's only 21 years old.
Yeah,
and to be making a film like this at 21 for any other actress would be this like huge undertaking, and like I think that if this was an unknown and they had given this performance, we'd be looking at it as this huge big breakout performance of like a new star. Because it's Chloe Grace Moretz, I think people expect this of her now, and that's a little bit unfair because she puts everything into this and it comes out as a really it is a subtle performance in a lot of ways, but it's a really really good one.
You said something really interesting there about how she's not, we don't often see her in turmoil in the film, maybe a handful of scenes, but, and it's not fair to compare it to the film that's not out yet, but we've got another film about gay conversion therapy camp called Boy Erased coming out with Lucas Hedges, and that's got like Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman as his parents.
It's one directed by Joel Edgerton.
That's it, yeah.
And I think Desiree has actually mentioned that she finds it amazing that that got greenlit so easily, whereas the lesbian drama didn't get greenlit so easily.
Well, I think that one, and like I say, you know, I haven't seen that film, but I think that one looks very serious and very grave and very emotionally taught and very Oscar-y and very big performance. Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman and... Mm-hmm. You know, it's more about his relationship with his parents than it is about him in the camp. But like I said, I haven't seen it, but that's just what I can tell from the trailer and how the film's being marketed and when the film's being released as well. This film, tonally, is so interesting. Because it's first and foremost a drama, but it's also got comedy elements. And there's, you know, not horror, but there's something kind of sinister and creepy about certain characters in the film. There's this underlying sense, but it is also, you know, it's very bright, it's very colourful.
It's irreverent as well. I mean, they're teenagers, and you can feel that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not all like, you know, doom and gloom, and they're dealing with this their sexual identity, and it's got to be so depressing and downtrodden. And they actually have this gleeful youthfulness to it as well. Like, they're exploring who they are at the same time. And it's interesting you say there's a sinister element. There is one character.
Yeah,
you
know, it's just that one character.
It's just, but I think that like what she does. So what I really appreciated about this film is that nobody is evil per se. There's no like outward antagonist that they have to sort of overcome. It's just, I think it's just, she does such a good job of showing how people act out of fear and ignorance. And you almost feel as sorry for those people as, you know, you might do for the kids that are put in this situation. And I think that there's a compassion and understanding that comes with that kind of outlook. That, you know, the camp counselor, what's his name?
Rick.
Reverend Rick.
Yeah. My favorite character in the film.
I really like that actor. I think that he's great. And he does also such a good job of playing this. You can see it's a performance that he's putting on, that he doesn't necessarily believe what he's saying, because you find out later on, I don't think this is a spoiler, but you find out later on that he overcame
his homosexuality.
Same-sex attraction.
Himself.
Same-sex attraction.
Same-sex attraction, right.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that there's a tenderness to the way that she treats her characters, and I appreciate that.
Well, she's not stupid. She knows if she goes into this film and portrays these people as evil, then people who already that gives the people who already believe in conversion therapy ammo to say, well, we're not like that.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's an over the top performance. Like, these people, because they're so real, I don't think there's any way you can really argue that the kind of emotional turmoil that they put these kids through is a very, very real thing. And the thing about the comedy in the film as well, in relation to this kind of the darkness in it too, is that there comes a point like a quarter of the way into the film where you stop seeing the film as being about queer teenagers and you start seeing the film as just being about teenagers.
Yeah.
Because there are so many varied characters in this movie that they don't fit any stereotypes. Her roommate Erin, Jane Fonda, Sasha Lane's character, the girl who likes to sing karaoke.
Yeah.
They're all so varied and different. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's so key for this.
Forrest Goodluck as well, Adam. Yeah. He's great. He's
a character that I loved, but I don't, I've not quite got my head around.
So interesting.
Yeah, so interesting. And if when I watch the movie again, I'm going to be watching him because he's some of the things that he says and some of the way that he acts sometimes is fascinating. And he is so different to anybody else in that in that group. And I just think that that varied nature of the characters means that it does. The reason it's so bright and it's not going to be like Boy Erased is because this is a mainstream film. This is a film that is not out there to appeal to kind of Oscar audiences. I think Desiree Akhavan wants this film to appeal to
everyone.
Yeah, everyone, yeah. Including most importantly, 16-year-old girls and boys that might be dealing with these kind of problems, because then they get to see themselves represented on screen as not, you know, completely depressed, broken people.
Yeah,
you know, which is great.
Yeah, when we saw it, there was an introduction by Desiree Akhavan and Chloe Grace Moretz, and they spoke a bit about how the film is authentic and that the lesbian sex scenes were important to them to get them right and to have their, you know, have real truth in them. And I think it's interesting what you're saying, that would Boy Erased get made if it was about a young girl rather than a young boy?
Well, specifically from a female perspective as well, you know, like I think that they mentioned this in their introduction, that they're really proud of the fact that they're all female sort of team leading this project, and you know, authentic in the sense that like the director is a, you know, bisexual woman who has experience with these things, and she her perspective is very much of that realm.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. It's very true. I think that it's a testament to Desiree as a director that she doesn't just, of course, Cameron's the main character, and you can kind of tell why she's the main character, because she's kind of an everyman in a way, or an everywoman.
She's just about not Juno.
If
she had a little few more one-liners, she'd be a very Juno-esque character.
Yeah, but she's not. She's quite reserved, and she's a good listener and a good, like, she definitely looks at everything around her and takes it in before she makes decisions, and that's very important to her being a central character. But it's a testament to Desiree Akhavan and her partner's writing on this that characters like Reverend Rick get given kind of almost as much time to expose themselves as a character. And the fact that that Cameron, for me, isn't the most sympathetic character in the film, even though she's the young girl that's been sent to the gay conversion camp, is really, really sad to watch Reverend Rick not have the kind of personality that Cameron has to escape from this kind of thing. And I think that's a testament to Desiree as to, like, she's not going to let this film become Cameron's eulogy or any of these other kids' eulogy. She wants it to be, you know, a triumphant film, but she's still going to look at this character, Reverend Rick, and say, this is what happens when you don't escape, when you don't have the support.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or, like, and being a character of action rather than passivity.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
So that's The Miseducation of Cameron Post, which is out in cinemas today. If you have any thoughts on The Miseducation of Cameron Post, do let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com or reaching out to us on Twitter @CurzonCinemas. It's not the only film out this week, though. Bart Layton's American Animals is also out. And if you're interested, we have another podcast out today as well, where we discuss American Animals. And you can hear from the director himself, Bart Layton. And also on Curzon Home Cinema, you can still watch the 5-star masterpiece Cold War. Incredible film. Do check it out. It's very, very short. You could watch it so many times over the weekend if you wanted to. And you can listen to our podcast on that as well. We did a few weeks ago where we spoke to the film's actors, Yuasha Kulig and Thomas Kott. That is it from the Curzon podcast this week. Thank you very much for listening. It's goodbye from Stephen.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from Kelly.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.